This is the last day of this October 2012 7-day session, and we'll take up another koan today. This is from the Shoyoroku collection. Shoyoroku is translated usually as the Book of Serenity or the Book of Equanimity. And this is number 13, Linji's Blind Donkey. When Linji was about to die, he entrusted San Sheng with his Dharma line, saying, "After my passing, do not destroy my treasury of the eye of the Dharma." San Sheng asked, "How would I dare destroy your treasury of the eye of the Dharma?" Linji, if someone asks you about it, how will you respond? San Sheng shouted, "Linji, who would have known that my treasury of the eye of the Dharma would perish in this blind donkey?" First, some biographical material about these two, mainly Linji. He, of course, is he's known in Japan as Rinzai, but of course he was a Chinese master, and one of the most famous of the Chinese masters. There may be, he's one of the top 10, I'd say, of the Chinese masters. He lived in the 9th century. I'm reading now from Andy Ferguson's Zen's Chinese Heritage. His name is the name of one of the two main lineages of Zen that survive to the present day. There's the Linji or Rinzai school, and there's the Cao Dong or Soto school. So we don't have anything that I could find about his early life, but he became a monk, and he began by studying the sutras, good foundation for the life of a monk. Studied the sutras, the Vinaya. Vinaya is the collection of monastic rules and regulations, and the various doctrines that were carried on the currents of Buddhism in his era. He practiced under a master Guishan, but his enlightenment came about under Huangbo, or Obaku in Japanese. And here is the original account from the records. From the beginning of his residence at Huangbo. Huangbo was also the name of the mountain where Huangbo, the teacher, lived. They often, the master took the name of the mountain. From the beginning of his residence at Huangbo, Linji's performance of his duties was exemplary. At that time, Muzhou Dao Ming served as head monk. Muzhou asked Linji, "How long have you been practicing here?" Linji said, "3 years." Muzhou said, "Have you gone to Doksan with the master or not?" Linji said, "No, I haven't. I don't know what to ask him." Muzhou said, "Why not ask him, what's the essential meaning of Buddhism?" So, Linji apparently was good at doing what he was told, so he went to see Huangbo, and he started to pose his question, what is the essential meaning of Buddhism? And then Huangbo struck him. Linji left and went to Muzhou. Muzhou said, What happened when you asked him? Linji said, before I could get the words out, he hit me. I don't understand. Mujo said, go ask him again. So Linji asked Wangbo again, and Wangbo once again hit him. And then Linji asked a third time, and Wangbo hit him again. So then Linji went back to Mujo and he said, before, you urged me to ask about the Dharma, but all I got was a beating. Because of evil karmic hindrances, I'm not able to comprehend the essential mystery. So today, I'm going to leave. Let's just pause and appreciate this some. Notice that what he attributes his lack of understanding to his own karmic obstructions, rather than blaming someone else, either Wangbo or Muzhou. It's already a sign of unusual person, a person of real promise. The being struck is hard for us as Westerners to appreciate, but from what I understand, it is appreciated, at least in Zen, I think in both in Japan and China, and probably Korea. This was not seen as punishment, but as a sign that the master respected you. Again, it's hard for us to understand that. I remember reading once about a Japanese monk who's in the Rinzai tradition in Japan, who would come out of Doksan with rubbing his head and saying, oh, he just keeps hitting me. This is present day. This is not something that I would do with Westerners. It wouldn't be understood. It wouldn't be taken the way it would be intended, which is as encouragement. Or, well, there are different reasons why a teacher would strike a student. But it's very, very, it appears very often in these mondo, the dialogues that we have in the records. But it was meaningful. The student saw that it was a kind of teaching and a reaching out to the student. And here Linji faulted himself for not being able to use it better. So he says, okay, I'm going to have to leave. Mujo said, if you're going to leave, you must say goodbye to the master. No, not so fast. Hang on. So then Linji bowed to Mujo and he went off. But then Mujo himself went to Wangbo and said, that monk who asked you the questions, although he's young, he's exceptional. If he comes to say goodbye to you, please give him an appropriate instruction. Later, he'll become a great tree under which everyone on earth will find refreshing shade. So the next day, Linji did go to bid goodbye to Wangbo. And now Wangbo said, you don't need to go somewhere else. Just go over to the Gaoan Monastery and practice with Da Yu. He'll explain it to you. So you don't need to go anywhere else. This suggests that this Gaoan Monastery was just, you know, across the fence, or just over the hill. So Linji again did as he was told, and when he got to this Master Dayu. Dayu said, "Where have you come from?" Linji said, "From Wangbo." Dayu said, "What did Wangbo say?" Linji said, "Three times I asked him about the essential Dharma, and three times I got hit. I don't know if I made some error or not." Dayu said, "Wangbo has old grandmotherly affection and endures all this difficulty for your sake. And here you are asking whether you've made some error or not." And at these words, Linchi was awakened. Here too, it's not the kind of classic trigger for awakening. With Dayu explaining this, this is Wangbo's compassion, and going to all this trouble, and here you're asking about whether you made an error or not. But it was probably something about the way, of course, it was something about the way Dayu said this, but even more, it would have had to have been Linchi's state of mind when he went to this second master, or his state of no mind. Awakening is always preceded by this no mind of wide openness and silence. Perhaps Linchi had been working on his difficulties with Wangbo and in his mind and puzzling over it and really questioning himself. Undoubtedly, he had been, and he had questioned himself into a samadhi condition when he reached this Dayu. So he came to awakening, and then Linchi, as usual, we're just getting the bare bones here of what happened. There's so much we could fill in, we could speculate. You know, how much time was it after his awakening before he then said to Dayu, "Actually, Wangbo's dharma is not so great." At which Dayu grabbed him and said, "Why, you little bedwetter! You just came and said you don't understand. But now you say there's not so much to Wangbo's teaching. What do you see? Speak! Speak!" And Linji punched him in the side three times. Dayu let go of him and said, "Your teacher is Wangbo. I've got nothing to do with it." So then Linji left Dayu and went back to Wangbo. "Okay, look out, Wangbo." Wangbo saw him and said, "This fellow who's coming and going, how can he ever stop?" And Linji said, "Only through grandmotherly concern." It's not quite clear how that fits, but that's what the translation is. "Only through grandmotherly concern." Maybe he's letting Wangbo that now he understands how compassionate those blows of his were. And that Linji bowed to Wangbo and stood in front of him. Wangbo said, "Who has gone and returned?" Linji said, "Yesterday I received the master's compassionate instruction. Today I went and practiced at Dayu's." Wangbo said, "What did Dayu say?" And then Linchi recounted his encounter with Dayu. And to which Wangbo said, "That old fellow Dayu talks too much. Next time I see him, I'll give him a swat." Linchi said, "Why wait until later? Here's a swat right now." And then he hit Wangbo. He hit Wangbo. Wangbo yelled, "This crazy fellow has come here and grabbed the tiger's whiskers." Linchi shouted. Wangbo then yelled to his attendant, "Take this crazy guy to the practice hall." And that's the end of this famous, legendary encounter or details of the great Lin Chi's awakening and the aftermath. And so now some other dialogues involving Lin Chi. One day he was sleeping in the monk's hall. Huang Bo came in and, seeing him lying there, he struck the floor with his staff. Lin Chi woke up, lifted his head, and seeing Huang Bo standing there, he then put his head back down and went back to sleep. Huang Bo struck the floor again and walked to the upper section of the hall. Huang Bo then saw the head monk who was sitting in meditation. Huang Bo said to the head monk, "There's someone down below who is sitting in meditation. What do you imagine you're doing?" The head monk said, "What's going on with this old fellow?" That's the end of it. Later, Guishan told this story to another master, Yangshan, and he commented, "Just like old Huang Bo, what was his meaning?" And then this other master, Yangshan, said, "Two betters, one race." Anyone who's overslept in Sesshin and been late getting to the Zendo, and many of us have, would find it a little hard to imagine just looking, putting your head down and going back to sleep. Usually what the monitors find when they shake someone out of a deep sleep, when they're late to get it to a sitting, is the person pretty leaps up and practically hits the ceiling. They're so horrified that the head monitor, the second monitor, is standing over them, waking them up. It's another one. Lin Chi went to visit Bodhidharma's stupa. A stupa is a kind of a monument, usually sort of in the shape of a it has a pointed top. It's pretty massive, squat, with a peak at the top. And strictly speaking, a stupa is said to contain the relics of a Buddha or of an enlightened person. So he went to see Bodhidharma stupa, and there was a caretaker there who said, "Will you first bow to the Buddha, or will you first bow to the first ancestor?" First ancestor is Bodhidharma. So are you going to bow to the Buddha first or to Bodhidharma? Lin Chi said, "I don't bow to either one." The caretaker said, "How did the Buddha and first ancestor offend you?" To which Lin Chi shook his sleeves and left. It's another one of these classic actions or gestures that has a lot of meaning to it. And this appears in some of the koans too. Shook his sleeve and left. Here's a simple one. Lin Chi, probably before the assembly of monks, he said, "There's a type of monk who goes to Mount Wutai to seek out Manjusri." Mount Wutai was said to be the abode of Manjusri, the Bodhisattva of wisdom. And it became, maybe because of that reputation, it became a very, very prominent pilgrimage site. in China. I was there in, 26 years ago. And the original, what we're told, was originally there were 800 temples on Wutai Shan, Mount Wutai, and there were only a few there that hadn't been destroyed. So there's a type of monk who goes to Mount Wutai to seek out Manjushri. That's not why I went. That student has already made a mistake. There's no Manjushri at Mount Wutai. Do you want to know Manjushri? It's just what is in front of your eyes. From first to last, it's not anything else. Don't doubt it anywhere you go. It's the living Manjushri. We have a figure of Manjushri that we place on the altar for Sesshin. It's placed in front of the Buddha to represent the mission we are all on in Sesshin of awakening to our innate wisdom, or we have already to deepen that understanding. And then the last dialogue we have here is exactly the case, the koan we're working on today. And it says that Linchi passed away, sitting upright. Now the other guy in the koan, San Sheng, he's not as well known. Very few masters are as well known as Linchi. Just a couple, three dialogues here. When San Sheng met Shangyan asked, "Where are you from?" San Sheng said, "From Linchi." Shangyan said, "Did you bring Linchi's shout?" San Sheng suddenly picked up a cushion and struck Shangyan in the mouth with it. The answer would be yes. When San Sheng arrived at Mount De, he started to arrange his meditation items when De Shan said, "Don't put out your meal apron. There's no rice here." It's an opening challenge in this Dharma combat. "There's no rice here." San Sheng said, "Although it's here, it can't be shown." Deshan took his staff and made as if to strike San Sheng. San Sheng grabbed it and pushed Deshan onto the meditation platform. Deshan laughed loudly. San Sheng shouted and went out. Deshan is, his Japanese name is Toksan. He's another one of the top 10, the Chinese masters. One more here. When San Sheng was at Shui Feng's, he heard Shui Feng give a teaching that all persons without exception have an ancient mirror. This monkey has an ancient mirror. San Sheng stepped forth and said, "For endless kalpas it has been nameless. Why does the master propose it to be an ancient mirror?" Shui Feng said, "It's because of defective existence." San Sheng said, "As for me, I don't see where you came up with this." Shui Feng said, "My mistake. I have many duties as abbot." This is a little different translation than the one we have, which is in our koan collection. Now, this is from the Blue Cliff record. But let's just let it go and move on here. So, Lin Chi's blind donkey. So when he was about to die, he entrusted San Sheng with his Dharma line. So he made him his Dharma successor. And he said, after my passing, do not destroy my treasury of the eye of the Dharma. It's a human enough concern, surely, that when a teacher is dying, if he wants, of course, wants to see his teaching, his Dharma, go on. Is it just that Lin Chi is expressing here? Please don't destroy my treasury of the eye of the Dharma. This phrase, that treasury of the eye of the Dharma, sometimes it's called the eye of the true Dharma, is a very respected one in Zen and Chan. One of the first koans in the Mumon Kan is about the famous meeting of the Buddha with Mahakashapa on Vulture Peak, where he holds up a flower. And in that, as he holds up the flower, he says, I have the all-pervading eye of the true Dharma. And then he says a little bit more, and he says, I now pass it on to Mahakashapa. This is after Mahakashapa smiled. What is this all-pervading eye of the true Dharma? Well, this is our assignment, every one of us, to open this eye and open it and open it and wider and wider. The word Dharma is very rich Sanskrit word. There are several like that, certainly Buddha, Sangha, Karma. But Dharma has different meanings. One is the teaching. So here with that meaning, we could hear Lin Chi saying, don't destroy my teaching. Well, we can even see it in a more limited way, as there are different lineages of Zen have different teachings, have different styles of teaching. But the teaching is also, the other meaning of Dharma is the law of the universe. The way, the Tao, all of this also is what is in the word Dharma. Dharma, as the meaning of teaching, there are, or rather, Dharma in the sense of the law, sometimes is expressed in three ways. There are three essentials to this law, and the three are suffering, impermanence, and no self. Suffering, well, this is also the first of the Four Noble Truths. Suffering, another, maybe a better way to put it is unsatisfactoriness. The nature of conditioned existence is unsatisfactory. unsatisfying, involves suffering, suffering in every kind of way, the obvious forms of suffering, and then the less obvious ones. And those are the ones we get up close to in Sesshin, the ways that we create suffering on top of suffering. There's the suffering of just having a body and a mind, and all that goes with that, the deterioration of the body and mind, the injuries, sickness, and so forth. And then there is, beyond that, there is the self-centered ways that we interpret these kinds of ordinary pain, the self-referential ways that we interpret them. And that's what we see so clearly and painfully in Zazen, especially in Sesshin, the ways that we create our own mental suffering and physical. They're linked. That our physical pain is, quite a large degree, determined by the way we are misusing the mind, the way we are misusing our attention. So there's the three characteristics of existence. One is suffering, another is impermanence. There's no one who would dispute that this is a characteristic of existence, that everything has a beginning, it matures or develops and ages and lasts a shorter or longer period of time and then declines and passes away. This is the nature of all component things, to use a Buddhist word, all aggregate things. And the third is the Dharma of no self. And these, it certainly follows from the second one, if everything is in flux, everything is impermanent, then how can there be any kind of permanent self? Actually, the Buddha didn't say categorically that there is no self in any sense, but his point was that there is no absolute, discrete, unchanging, permanent self. But impermanence, change, arising and disappearing, coming into being and being destroyed or dying. How, when San Cheng says, how would I dare destroy your treasury of the eye of the Dharma? Or how would I dare destroy your Dharma? Maybe he means, how could I destroy what is destruction itself? What is change itself? How do you destroy change? Destruction is change. Jean Cocteau was once asked, if your house was burning down, what would you save? And he said, the fire. The change. The Dharma. So after that response from San Cheng, how would I dare destroy your treasury of the eye of the Dharma? Lin Shi said, if someone asks you about it, how will you respond? This is a roundabout way that that we see in various koans this indirect way of asking a question, the indirect style that the Chinese were so fond of, maybe still are. So instead of Lin Chi saying, "Let's see you respond," he says, "If someone asks you about it, how will you respond?" To which San Sheng shouted. What's the meaning of that shout? It's like the shout is like the stick, like the way that these monks were struck by the master. They're not random acts. They're not have nothing to do with anger or irritation. They have meaning. They carry meaning with them. And what is this shout? And that's one of the points of the koan that the student has to demonstrate in Doksan, is to convey the meaning of that shout of Sangsheng. Well, as his final response, Lin Chi says, "Who would have known that my treasury of the eye of the Dharma would perish in this blind donkey. On the face of it, it sounds like he's pretty disappointed in Sangsheng. Imagine taking that to your grave, having destroyed the Dharma. How can the Dharma be destroyed? Okay, maybe a certain facet of a certain type of a certain lineage of it, but how can the Dharma, how can suffering, no self, and impermanence be destroyed? How can the unborn be destroyed? How can the undying be destroyed? How can that which is beyond creation and destruction, birth and death, how can that which is even beyond change be destroyed? And what does he mean by blind donkey? One can get the impression from reading these dialogues that involve especially Lin Chi and Hakuin's another one, Deshan or Toksan is another one. These are the ones most famous for their wielding of the stick, the staff, and the shouting, that they're just always in a tirade, that they're just but this would be a complete misunderstanding. It's instead it should be understood as a vigorous, direct presentation of this living reality, this living Dharma. Blind donkey. Blind has different meanings in Zen. It can mean the ordinary sense, just you're blind to the way things are, you're ignorant. It can also mean blind to discrimination. That is, where one's Dharma eye is so wide open that one has no concern with the world of appearances, the world that is, for most people, is the world of of differences and which invites conflict and everything. To be blind can mean to see so clearly into the unity of all beings, all existences, that there is just this one mind. The Huayan Sutra, one of the most famous of the sutras, are sometimes called the Avatamsaka Sutra, is a line, if you have no views, you can see. You know, we hear in Buddhist doctrine about right views and wrong views. We heard this actually from Basui, in the teachings of Basui that we read for most of the Sesshin. Is mostly from the questioner. The questioner is asking in terms of this very well-known feature of Buddhist doctrine, having right views and wrong views. In Zen, we want to have no views. We want to go beyond all views that imply limited perspectives, this and not that, right and wrong. If you have no views, you can see. Or as Roshi Kaplow said, you have to be empty to give, blind to see. Be blind then means, in this respect, means to not be caught in appearances, not to be deceived by this world of form, to have seen the formlessness of this world of form, the world of appearances. To see the other side of it. To not be deceived by differences. The ordinary person is threatened by differences. This is the what is behind all the many forms of tribalism, whether it's religious differences, political differences, ethnic differences. To be blind is to see, not to ignore differences, but to see through them to this one mind seen with this all-pervading eye of the true Dharma. Our time is up. We'll stop and recite the four vows.